What is my purpose? It is one of the toughest questions faced by humans. Welcome to A Walk Within, a show where we visit a short story from around the world and revisit my life experiences invoked by it to explore the parallels between the two and find newer meanings. I'm Anoop, and in today's episode, we will explore a short story, The Lonely Ones, by Edward W. Ludwig, published in the July 1953 edition of IF, World of Science Fiction magazine. And to me, how it underscores an ancient concept that humans are forever grappling with, purpose. Before we start, I want to thank all the listeners for their tremendous support of the show. You can further help by sharing the show with anyone who you think will enjoy it. As always, we'll begin the story once we are back. This is a heavily edited version of the story. I highly recommend you to read the story in its original form. It's quite meditative. With that said, let's start the story. Life. It was a word uttered only with reverence, for throughout the solar system, with the exception of on Earth, there had been only death. World after world, all dead. No sign of life, no reminder of life, and no promise of life. Thus the loneliness had grown, for without life on other worlds, where was the sky's challenge? Why go on and on to discover only worlds of death? The dream of the spaceman turned from planets to the stars. Somewhere in the galaxy, or in other galaxy, there had to be life. Life was a wonderful and precious thing. It wasn't right that it should be confined to a single tiny planet. If it were, then life would seem meaningless. Mankind would be a freak, a cosmic accident. And now, the Wanderer was on the first interstellar flight, hurtling through the dark spaces to Proxima Centauri, moving silently, as if motionless, yet at a speed of 160,000 miles a second. And ahead loomed the great grey planet, the only planet of the Sun, growing larger, larger each instant.
"Lord,"
said Captain Sam Wiley.
"It is a big one, isn't it?"
Lieutenant Gunderson nodded.
"It is a big one."
They stared at the image in the Wanderer's forward visi screen. At the great, shining grey ball. They stared hard, for it was like an enchanted, God-given fruit handed them on a star-flecked platter of midnight. It was like the answer to a thousand prayers, a shining symbol of hope, which could mean the end of loneliness.
"It's 10 times as big as Earth. Do you think this will be it, Captain?"
"I'm afraid to think."
A thoughtful silence.
"Captain?"
"Yes?"
"Do you hear my heart pounding?"
Captain Wiley smiled.
No, of course not."
"It seems like everybody should be hearing it, but we shouldn't get excited, should we? We mustn't hope too hard. But there should be life there, don't you think, Captain?"
"There may be. Prepare for deceleration, Lieutenant."
"Yes, sir."
Captain Sam Wiley continued to stare at the beautiful grey globe in the visi screen. There it was, he thought. A new world. A world that perhaps held life. A gentle murmuring hum filled the ship. The indicator lights on the control panel glowed like a swarm of pink eyes.
"Deceleration compensator adjusted for 12 Gs, sir."
Captain Wiley nodded, still studying the image of the planet. They looked at the world.
"Wouldn't it be wonderful, Captain? Just think. To meet another race, it wouldn't matter what they were like, would it? If they were primitive, we could teach them things. If they were ahead of us, they could teach us. You know what I'd like? To have someone meet us, to gather around us. It wouldn't matter if they were afraid of us or even if they tried to kill us. We'd know that we are not alone.
I know what you mean. There's no thrill in landing on dead worlds. If no one's there to see you, you don't feel like a hero.
That's it, Captain. That's why I came on this crazy trip. I guess that's why we all came.
Lieutenant, commence deceleration. 6 Gs.
Yes, sir.
The planet grew bigger, filling the entire visi screen. Someone coughed behind Captain Wiley.
Sir, the man would like to look at the screen. They can't see the planets out of the ports yet.
Sure.
Captain stepped aside. Doyle looked, then Parker and Fong, just three of them, for Watkins had sliced his wrist the fourth year out and Brown was drunk. As they looked, a realization came to Captain Wiley. The men were getting old. They had been boys, and now something was gone. Now they had become men. And yet, for a few moments, as they gazed at the screen, they seemed like happy, expectant children.
I wish Brown could see this. He says now he isn't going to get off his couch till we land and discover life. Says he won't dare look for himself.
The planet's ripe for life,
said Fong, the astrophysicist.
Atmosphere 40% oxygen, lots of water vapor, no poisonous gases, according to spectroscopic analysis. It should be ideal for life.
There is life there,
said Parker, the radar man.
You know why? Because we've given up 18 years of our lives. 9 years to get here, 9 to get back. I'm 30 now. I was 21 when we left Earth. I gave up all those good years. They say that you can have something if you pay enough for it. Well, we've paid for this. There has to be a sort of universal justice. That's why I know there is life there. Life that moves and thinks. Maybe even life that we can talk to.
You need a drink.
The Centaurians. What'll they be like? Monsters or men? If Parker's right about universal justice, they'll be men.
Hey, where there is man, there is woman. A Centaurian woman, say?
Look at those clouds. Damn it, we can't see the surface.
Hey, there. Look there. To the right. See it? It's silver. Down in a hole in the clouds. It's like a city.
Maybe it's just water.
No, it's a city.
Bring her down, Captain. God, Captain, bring her down fast. Drag Brown in here. He ought to see this.
Can't you bring her down faster, Captain?
Damn it. It is a city. Why doesn't someone get Brown?
Take to your couches, men. Landing is apt to be a bit bumpy. Better strap yourselves in.
Down went the rocket. More slowly now. Great plumes of scarlet thundering from its forward-breaking jets. Down, down into the soft cotton-like clouds, the whiteness sliding silently past the ports. Suddenly,
to those in the ship from the planet called Earth, please refrain from landing at this moment. You will await landing instructions.
That voice! It was human!
Captain Wiley's trembling hand moved over the jet control panel. The ship slowed in its descent. The cloud outside the portholes became motionless, a milky whiteness pressed against the ship.
That voice! Am I crazy? Did everyone hear it?
We heard it, Parker. It was in our mind. Telepathy. Yes, the planet is inhabited. There are intelligent beings on it. Perhaps they are more intelligent than we are.
It was strange. The man had hoped, dreamed, prayed for this moment. Now they sat stunned, unable to comprehend, their tongues frozen.
We'll see them very soon. We'll wait for their directions.
Silence, save for the constant rumbling roar of the jets which held the ship afloat.
I wonder how long it'll be.
It seems like a long time.
We've waited 9 years. We can wait a few more minutes.
They waited.
Good Lord, how long is it going to be? What time is it? We've been waiting an hour. What kind of people are they down there?
Maybe they've forgotten about us.
That's it. They've forgotten about us. Hey, you, down there, you, that talk to us. We're still here, damn it. We want to land.
Parker.
We regret that a landing is impossible at this moment. Our field is overcrowded, and your vessel is without priority. You must wait your turn.
Captain Wiley stared forward at nothing.
Whoever you are, please understand that we have come a long way to reach our planet. Our trip...
We do not wish to discuss your trip. You will be notified when landing space is available.
Wait, tell us who you are. What do you look like? Tell us.
Talking to you is quite difficult. We must form our thoughts so as to form word patterns in your minds. You will be notified.
Wait a minute.
Parker stood before a porthole.
Hey look, Captain. There is a streak of red, like a meteor. And there is another.
They are rockets.
His face became grim. So near, and yet so far. He trembled. He became like Parker.
Why should we wait? Why must we land in the airfield? Parker, prepare to release flares. We're going down. We'll land anywhere. In a state, in a country. We don't have to wait for orders.
Parker bounced off his couch.
Drown! We're going to land! We're going down. We're going down.
The grumble of the Wanderer's jet loudened, and vibration filled the ship as it sank downwards. Suddenly, it lurched upward, like a child's ball caught in a stream of rising water.
What the hell?
Abruptly, the strange movement ceased. The ship seemed motionless. There was no vibration.
Captain, there is no change in altitude. We are still at 35,000 feet. No more, no less.
We must be going down. Kill jets 4 and 6.
A moment later.
There is no change, Captain.
To those in the vessel from the planet Earth, please do not oppose orders of the Landing Council. You are the first visitors in the history of our world whom we have had to restrain with physical force. You will be notified when landing space is available.
A day passed, and a night. Then at last.
To those in the vessel from the planet Earth, you will now land. We will carry you directly over the field. Then you will descend straight down. The atmosphere is suitable to your type of life and is free of germs. You will not need protection.
The men stared at one another.
Hey, did you hear that? It says we can go down.
We're going down.
We are going to land?
The Wanderer moved as though caught in a grip of a giant, invisible hand.
You may now descend.
Lieutenant, wake up. Let's go.
The ship sank downwards through the thick sea of clouds. The man walked to the ports. A tenseness and excitement grew in their faces, like dying flame being fanned into its former brilliancy. Out of the clouds loomed monstrous shining silver spires and towers, cyclopean bridges, gigantic lake-like mirrors, immense golden spears, a jungle of fantastic shape and color. The man whispered, murmured, the flame of their excitement growing, growing.
The whole planet is a city.
The Wanderer came to rest on a broad landing field of light blue stone, its interior charged with an electric, pregnant silence.
You first, Captain. You be the first to go outside.
Captain Wiley stepped through the airlock, his heart pounding, and his eyes were shining. He'd waited so long that it was hard to believe the waiting was over. The journey was over, and now the loneliness would soon be over. Mankind was not alone. It was a good universe after all. He stepped outside, followed by Lieutenant Gunderson, then by Parker, Doyle, and Fong. The landing field was huge, perhaps 10 miles across, and its sides were lined with incredible ships, the smallest of which seemed 40 times as large as the Wanderer. There were silver ships, golden ships, black ships, round ships, and scattered over the field were creatures. A few were the size of men, but most were giants by comparison. Some were humanoid, some reptilian. Beyond the ships and the field lay the great city, its webwork of towers, minarets, spheres, and bridges like the peaks of an enormous mountain range stretching up into the space itself. The structures were like the colors of a rainbow mixed in a cosmic paint pot, molded and solidified into fantastic shapes by a mad god.
"Captain, the ship is moving!"
Silently, the Wanderer was drifting to the side of the field.
"We are removing your vessel so that other descending ships will not damage it."
"Wait, wait, don't go away. Help us. Where can we see you?"
"It is difficult for us to speak in thoughts that you understand."
Captain Wiley studied the face of his men. They were not faces of conquerors or the triumphant spacemen. They were the faces of dazed, frightened children who had caught a glimpse of hell. He attempted, feebly, to smile.
"All right. So it isn't like we expected. So no one came to meet us with brass bands and 10-cent flags. We've still succeeded, haven't we? We've found life that's intelligent beyond our comprehension. What if our own civilization is insignificant by comparison? Look at those beings. Think of what we can learn from them. Their ships might have exceeded the speed of light. They might be from other galaxies."
They strode to the nearest ship, an immense, smooth, bluish sphere. Two creatures stood before it, shaped like men and yet twice the size of men. They wore white, tight-skinned garments that revealed muscular bodies like those of gods. They looked at Captain Wiley and smiled. One of them pointed towards the Wanderer.
"Talk to them."
"How?"
"Anyway. Go ahead."
Beads of perspiration shone on Captain Wiley's face. He wiped his forehead and said,
"We are from Earth, the third planet."
The two godlike men seemed annoyed. They walked away, ignoring the Earthmen.
"All right, so they won't talk to us. Look at that city. Think of the things we can see there and tell the folks on Earth about. We'll be heroes."
"Let's go."
They walked towards a large oval opening in the side of the field. A hole between mountainous conical structures that seemed like the entrance to a street.
"To those of Earth, beings under the fourth stage of galactic development are restricted to the area of the landing field. We are sorry. In your primitive stage, it would be unwise for you to learn the nature of our civilization. Knowledge of our science would be abused by your people and used for the thing you call war. We hope that you have been inspired by what you have seen. However, neither we nor the other visitors to our planet are permitted to hold contact with you. It is suggested that you and your vessel depart."
"Listen, you. We've been 9 years getting here. By heaven, we won't leave now."
Madness flamed in Parker's eyes. He ran towards the wall. He collided with a jolt that sent him staggering backwards, crying, sobbing, screaming, all at once. Captain Wiley stepped forward. They stood looking at his body, which lay motionless except for the slow rising and falling of his chest.
"What now, Captain?"
Captain Wiley thought for a second. Then he said,
We are ignorant country bumpkins, Lieutenant, riding into the city in a chugging jalopy. We are stupid savages, trying to discuss the making of fire with the creators of atomic energy. We are children, racing a paper glider against an atomic-powered jet. We are too ridiculous to be noticed. We are tolerated, but nothing more.
Shall we go home?
I don't think I'd want to go home now. Could you bear to tell the truth about what happened?
If we told the truth, they probably wouldn't believe us. We've failed. It sounds crazy. We reached Proxima Centauri and found life, and yet, somehow, we failed. No, I wouldn't like to go home.
Still, we learned something. We know now that there is life on worlds beside our own. Somewhere, there must be other races like ours.
They looked at each other, strangely, for a long, long moment. At last, Lieutenant Gunderson asked,
"How far is Alpha Centauri?"
"Yes, men of Earth, we suggest that you try Alpha Centauri."
The man stood silent and numb, like bewildered children, as the implication of those incredible words sifted into their consciousness.
Did you hear that?
"Yes, Alpha Centauri."
His eyes began to twinkle, and then he smiled. Onward sped the wanderer, onward through cold, silent infinity, on and on, and there was no loneliness. You might be wondering why Captain Wiley smiled and agreed to go to Alpha Centauri. Someone who suffered 9 lonely years and seeing his crew getting old should just think about going back to Earth. What is the difference between going to Proxima Centauri and Alpha Centauri? The difference is purpose. From Aristotle's ergon argument to the Japanese concept like ikigai and many more throughout human history, many poets and philosophers spend their life exploring this concept. Generally, we confuse purpose with the goals. But as Cornell University psychologist Anthony Burrow argues, goals are intentions that can be accomplished, whereas purpose is intentionality or life aim. The purpose is the organizer of the goals, so that when you accomplish your goals, it's your purpose which tells you what goals you should be pursuing next. To understand from the story, when the spacemen embarked on the journey, they had a goal: to reach Proxima Centauri to find life. They reached their goal, but it still did not bring them happiness. The realization of Sam Wiley that their real purpose is to find life, not just one life, brought a smile on his face, and they continued with hope. Having a purpose makes you feel like you are living your best life. And it is also incorrect to think that we all have just one and only one purpose. So how do we find our purpose? As Anthony Burrow said, the answer to the question, "What is your purpose?" is not something that you can crowdsource. It's an internal quest. That's it for this episode. The link to the original story and all the music and sound effects used in this episode is available in the show notes. I will also leave a link to Anthony Burrow's interview for your reference. Once again, thank you for listening. Until next time, stay as awesome as you are.